I'm sure vegans want to get hammered just the same as everyone else wants to get hammered. Like, why are people not giving these
people
some
booze?
They just want to
get drunk and screw like the rest of us.
Exactly. So, but no one was giving it to them, you know?
Yeah,
so I wanted to give it to them.
Good. You just want somebody to give it to them.
Yeah.
Man, there's a bumper sticker. Today is the Monday after Thanksgiving, which means, according to the National Turkey Federation, that we Americans just killed and ate around 46 million turkeys over this past weekend. There are few things more delicious or more vexing to the moral mind than meat. My guest in this episode knows the entirety of that dilemma. She's an unrepentant meat eater who happens to lead Australia's most famous vegan restaurant in Delhi. There are few people who cut through the bullshit on both sides of this issue, quite like Shannon Martinez. And I was honored to be in Galway, Ireland at the Food on the Edge Symposium, ransacking the Hotel Bloody Mary bar at 7 in the morning with her. I'm Nathan Thornburg, and you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world. I usually just ask people what they had for breakfast, but I'm pretty sure I know what you had for breakfast.
Yeah, you watched it. I'm actually not a breakfast person, so that was forcing it down.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. But there's something about eating that can absorb alcohol.
Exactly. And also, you know, the smell of toast and eggs, just fucking gross. Asian food culture is so massive in Melbourne. That, you know, things like congee and pho, that's like my ideal kind of breakfast.
Yeah,
but like that white Western toast and butter and badly cooked eggs just does not do it for me.
Well, you guys are fucking breakfast imperialists. Like your breakfast, your toast notions have been coming into New York. And
like an avocado on toast?
Yeah, and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, the Australian toast joint is like a thing. Now.
Is it?
All right. Tell me about this drink setup we have.
Okay. Well, we have an exclusive local Irish vodka called Hussar.
That is with an R at the end.
Hussar.
Not an H. That'd be great if it was just called
Hussar.
That'd be amazing.
Imported by the 15th century legendary cavalry soldiers. Really? Triple distilled vodka with the finest grain and purest water. Mm.
So many lies in one blur.
So many lies. Wow. Okay. I actually didn't know that Ireland made vodka. So there we go. We've learned something today.
I literally went into the Dunn's stores here and asked the woman at the counter for the cheapest bottle of vodka.
Oh, good.
They had, because liquor is incredibly fucking expensive in this place. Like, they had Stolichna for, like, I don't know, like, 35 euros.
That's insane.
That's an outrage. Did you get some of this?
Not yet. I'm trying to make some room.
Yeah.
Oh, you did that good. That's a good amount of spice.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So we, it's not just the Hussar. That's what I'm going to call it from now.
Hussar.
It's not just the Hussar vodka. But we went and hacked the breakfast bar.
Yeah, we did.
For whatever shitty, they'd like, the little celery sticks. Like, we've literally recreated, like, an airplane Bloody Mary.
I think we've done good, really, considering. I mean, they did have the non-alcoholic Bloody Mary station, which seems kind of pointless.
That was very strange. They have, like, tomato juice. They had, like, a basket of unripe tomatoes next to
whole,
it.
Not even cut. what is that about?
Very strange.
Maybe you could hollow it out and actually drink it from the tomato. Oh, is that what? Put the pulp in the glass.
Supposed to make fucking, you know, chowder bread bowls.
Oh, I think so.
With our Bloody Mary.
Cheers. Well,
cheers.
Cheers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that vodka sucks.
Can you taste it? All I'm tasting
I can
is
taste it. It was yum before. Oh, it's hot, huh? Like on the chest.
See, like none of this is stuff that they mention on the back of the bottle.
Maybe it's because it's cold here. You know, they need an extra bitey.
This vodka sucks and is hot on the chest.
Huzzah.
Good.
Oh,
good
dear.
On you. Anyways.
The booze is expensive. I actually noticed here, I mean, booze is expensive at home too in Australia, but the prices here are like the same as they are at home, but it's in euro.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is literally costing me like, you know, a $35 euro bottle of vodka is costing me $70 Australian as opposed to $35 Australian. So it's actually kind of insane.
Yeah, you can't leave your country anymore.
Can't do it.
All right, so let's talk about that. You're Australian.
Correct.
Huzzah.
G'day.
what do you do down there?
So I have two vegan food businesses. One is a restaurant and one is a deli, Smith & Daughters and Smith & Deli, in Melbourne, in Fitzroy, vegan capital of Australia, I'd say.
Fitzroy itself?
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about the vegan culture there.
It's definitely changed quite a lot, especially since we opened the restaurant. But I think, you know, I started doing it quite a while ago when I was cooking in a pub that was sort of a big crust-punk metal kind of, you know, live music venue. So the crowd were pretty young. And that was, the vegan food scene was a lot smaller. It was a lot of Hare Krishna spots, probably like it is in so many places, you know.
Yeah.
And definitely you either sort of had your Hare Krishna sort of pay-as-you-feel joints. I'm not sure if you have those in the States, but basically the rules for these sort of restaurants are you come, you eat, and you pay what you feel it's worth, which, of course, a lot of people will pay nothing.
Yeah, because it's worth nothing.
Because all these bastards. Punk kids come there and just eat, and if you give them the option to not pay, they're not going to fuck. Yeah, they're not going to pay.
Yeah, yeah.
So of course, a lot of them have closed down. Funnily enough, you know.
Yeah, right. I remember I went to Brixton once when I was young, and they were, you know, they had like a collective punk kitchen where they were dumpster diving and like kind of
amazing.
Cooking together and all this
fuck
stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like very. It's very scattered. Like, it's hard to, I don't know. I wouldn't even say in New York where you would find that kind of thing. It's
not anymore, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there was probably a spot for that a while ago, but now,
yeah.
I mean, now fucking supermarkets put padlocks on their bins so people can't dumpster dive anymore, which I think is, you know, like, because they're so worried about someone dumpster diving and then getting food poisoning and then suing the supermarket for their trash being off, which is insane.
Has that actually happened?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. That's why they've started locking them.
Fuck.
I know, but, you know, friends of mine.
It only takes one litigious rat bastard.
Yeah, what kind of fucking dumpster diver sues the supermarket? Jesus Christ.
They're missing the idea.
I know.
All right, so you started cooking at this pub where there was kind of, it was a punk scene.
Yeah.
It was music
all
venue.
Music live
got
venue,
it.
Yeah.
I mean, were you just trying to serve them like sausages in the beginning?
No, literally, the one dish that they had on before I took over the kitchen was a piece of tofu that he would throw in the deep fryer.
Mm.
Nothing on
delicious.
It either. Mm. You can imagine, it's not like a tofu is a sponge or anything, you know, God. So it would just go straight into a deep fryer that was just used to cook all this meat.
Boy, the bathroom in that closet.
Oh, shit. I know. Vegan's one thing, but like a soaked piece of tofu. Okay. Just lubes everything up, you know.
Amazing.
So yeah, they would just chuck a piece of tofu in the fryer. Basically, we'd get a block and just cut it down the middle and then just throw it in the fryer. And of course, because it's sitting in water, it's just like spitting everywhere. And then he would put it onto the plate and the oil would slowly sort of start to seep out of this slab of tofu. And then he'd put red sauce on it. And then I don't even think he put cheese on it. I think he just put red sauce on it and just put some salad on the side, and that was the vegan dish. So I wasn't going to do that, so I just took it off and didn't have a vegan dish. But then the thing of people coming and asking me for vegan food all the time started becoming annoying, which is why I ended up putting on the tiny little menu, which is sort of what started everything, which was the vegan parma. What do you call them in the States? The breaded cutlet?
Oh, yeah, like veal parmigiana.
Yeah, yeah, like parmesan, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a chicken parmesan. So the chicken parmesan is like the most iconic Australian pub dish that we do.
Got it.
So you would think it's not prawns, it's not nothing, it's chicken parma. Uh-huh. But we do all types of parmas. So we have like parmas of the world.
Oh, yeah?
This is only at the finest establishments, obviously.
The finest pub.
The finest pubs in Australia. So you would have like the nacho parma.
Or, get the fuck
yeah,
out.
Hawaiian parmas. The chicken tikka parmas, which, fuck, you would literally just have chicken tikka sauce on top of a chicken cutlet with cheese.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Man.
So I managed to get away from Palmers of the World, but I did put a vegan Palmer on. And on Monday nights, it used to be like Palmer night, where it was $10 for a Palmer with chips, like fries and the token dressed greens. So I put that on a Monday, and we ended up going, you know, from 100 Palmers on a Monday to doing about 300 vegan Palmers on a Monday and about 50 non-vegan Palmers. So that was sort of like the light going off for me of like, shit, there is a whole lot of people eating like this and no one is actually catering for them.
And what was the cutlet? Was it like a Satan or?
Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, I would.
Some self criticism.
Oh,
here.
I'm all for self deprecation. I tell you, I get asked to make it all the time, and I refuse. I just absolutely refuse because it was before I knew.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. And it was before I knew how to cook vegan food properly. Yeah. You know, and I didn't know anything about it, so I went exploring. Like, one of my favorite things to do is to go down Chinatowns or whatever and just look in the grocery stores and just find anything that I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never seen before. I can't understand what's on the labeling. Then yeah. I'll buy it. And that's kind of what happened with this. And I found all these fake meats in this Asian grocery store in the freezer section, just kind of like, you know, just like head down into this, you know, big frozen box, just like pulling out bags of random shit and taking it home. And one of them was apparently plain, it was called labeled plain chicken. But it was so heavily five spiced.
Oh.
And it was gluten. So it was just, it looks kind of like, you know, like when boxers' ears get really weird.
Yeah. Cauliflower.
Cauliflower. It looked like a giant cauliflower ear.
Well, that's fucking delicious.
Exactly.
Now you're
hungry, right?
Now I'm hungry. Got a cauliflower
you
ear.
Thought you were done with breakfast.
Please tell me more.
So imagine a giant cauliflower ear that reeked of five spice. So I just went ahead and crumbed that baby and put red sauce and vegan cheese on it. And the vegan cheese at the time was terrible.
Yeah.
It's still not the best, but it's so much better than it used to be. You know, the vegan cheeses that are available. And the one I had, it was very reminiscent of like the putty that you use to fill gaps in your walls.
No, sure, yeah.
I'm doing it for you, right? And it doesn't melt.
We just kicked it up a notch. And it doesn't melt.
It doesn't melt properly. No, they say it does, but of course it doesn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, you would grate the cheese, but if you put it on like a box grater, the longer it took, the more it would just start turning into like a paste.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you couldn't really like crumble it on top like properly because it would just...
You just had to get like a spackling tool and just like spread it out.
Lay it out, yeah, exactly. Wow. And then put it under like a salamander, but it wouldn't melt properly, so it would just sort of turn into a hard piece of plastic. Oh, it was terrible. But, you know, it was... That shows you the poor state of vegan food.
That people were buying this shit from you.
They were loving it. And people still talk about it like it's good. And I keep telling customers, I'm like you've only got fond memories because it was 12 years ago.
Yeah, you don't want to go back.
You don't want that nightmare back in your life.
That's amazing. All right, so you're making terrible vegan parm that the people loved.
Mm.
And, I mean, if you're selling 300 of them, I imagine people, the vegan community was sort of like, oh shit, there's pub food.
They're buzzing. Yeah, totally.
So they're coming out. How did you take that and move forward from your crimes against
Parm.
I
should almost
Hawaiian.
Not be allowed to ever eat it again as punishment for fucking it up so bad.
I mean, nacho parm. I mean, that's gonna haunt me for a little while.
I'm sorry. The thing, I guess, purely coming out of ignorance in terms of vegan food, in my mind, I didn't think of vegan food as any different to, like, what vegans would want to eat was any different to what I would want to eat. So I wasn't thinking veggie stacks and buffalo cauliflower wings. I was just literally thinking, I just got to make the same menu.
Yeah.
Vegan, because why would they want to not eat the same thing that everyone else eats? Because that's what I want to eat. So surely that's what they want to eat.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to have a pub where it's like, you know, jugs of beer and pie floaters or like, you know, like classic pub food, steaks and all that. And then all of a sudden there's lentil dal and chickpea curries and stuff. I'm like, that just didn't even make sense to me. I'm like, go to an Indian restaurant if you want to eat dal. Like, you're in a pub, you want to eat pub food. So fish and chips and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But again, I was just buying all these mock products from these places because I still didn't know how to make it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that this was an insane market that no one was catering. Like, no one was catering for vegans, not in the way, in this way. And there was obviously a demand for it. So, you know, the food sort of just became, it just mirrored itself. So I just had an identical meat and vegan menu. And the problem with that too is that sometimes the vegans got the meat versions by mistake because they looked exactly the same.
Oh yeah.
So I had a lot of people throwing up in bathrooms or what? Coming into the kitchen and crying because the waitresses would accidentally take. So we had to start using little flags.
Oh yeah, your little like little vegan flag.
Little bees, you know.
Why were they thrown up? Was it the...
Because they ate meat, but, you know, I get it. I mean, that was our bad. But anyway, we got that under control eventually.
Did anybody just get a steak and just be like, fuck it. This is amazing.
This is exactly the same. How did you do it? Be like, oh, shit, yeah, no.
Is it fair to say there's like a couple of, you know, there's two ways of approaching vegan food? One is the kind of like... You know, the recreations of an omnivore menu, and the other is the kind of like
standard.
Yeah, this thing should just be vegetable based, or maybe draw off of Indian or Asian.
Yeah.
You know, food traditions. Is that still a conversation that's going on, or has one side of the battle won?
I think there's a place for both for sure, and I think the vegan food that I make. I never opened my business, so the restaurant, to target vegans. My whole idea was to help people that are wanting to reduce intake, not specifically becoming vegan, you know? And I think humans are intrinsically selfish and they don't like to go without what they like. And until I think we come to a point where we are literally forced to not eat the things we love, we'll continue to eat it. I mean... You look at the oceans and what we're doing to it, and we know for a fact that it's literally going to be a desert. And, you know, yet we still continue to be like, fuck it, let's just wait and see. maybe if we're lucky, we don't have to go without that fish, you know. And so I'm creating this food for people that don't want to go without but want to try and make a difference. You know, the sort of people that like to be able to pat themselves on the back and feel good about themselves because
customers are self-righteous, slightly obnoxious.
I think humans are self-righteous. I'm not going to point out mine particularly.
Your customers are humans.
They're humans. So, but you know, my favorite sort of vegan food is that vegan without trying. And so it's incredible dishes like the Thai dishes and the Indian dishes that are just vegan. They're not replicating things. That is my favorite sort of food. I don't like mock meats at all.
Okay.
Which is kind of a bit strange because that's what I do.
Yeah.
But it's not the vegan food that I like to eat personally. But, you know, I think you have one or the other. You've got your Bondi Babe yogi green smoothie chia seed pudding eating vegan. And then you go the other direction and it's that trash, you know, like the the burgers and the fried chicken and the hot dogs and the that side of veganism. And the food that we were trying to do at the restaurant is kind of sitting in the middle. It's your mum's sort of style of cooking, and it's, you know, your stroganoffs and your gnocchi and all those sort of dishes in between. Yeah. It's just like you're more your everyday food, not your extremes. Because, like, you know, green smoothies I have sometimes with gin in the morning if I'm hungover and want to be healthy.
That's what's happening now.
That's, red smoothies.
but it's not, yeah.
I think, you know, if I had opened Smith & Daughters doing purely veg-based dishes, it wouldn't be the business it was today. You know, we're doing up to 6,500 covers a month at the restaurant alone.
Yeah.
Which is massive.
It's an
all-vegan menu.
Jesus.
They're not even honey on the menu. Like proper vegan.
Wow.
And 75% of those customers are meat eaters. So majority of our customers are meat eaters, and it's because everyone's changing the way they eat now. We all know... Meat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner is not the way to go. And whatever reason people are doing it for, whether it's for the animals or purely because they know it's not good for you anymore, we shouldn't be processing this much, you know, meat.
Yeah.
Whatever reason people are doing it for, they're trying to make a difference. And so coming to me is really easy because they get to continue to eat the same stuff that they ate always, but they get to eat it in a vegan form, so they get to feel good about themselves without really having to change anything.
That's crazy. It's like married men cruising for dudes or something.
It actually is. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I guess I just had not thought that meat eaters would intentionally seek out a vegan experience.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, and they're booking a month in advance to come to the restaurant too. So it's a heavily planned out vegan affair. You
God
know,
damn.
It's not spontaneous. And, you know, it's kind of like an extension on the Meat Free Mondays thing.
I should say, by the way, that, you know, I from the outset, I'm slightly hostile to this idea. I mean, veganism, you know, I guess we all have our own path that we're on.
Yeah.
You know, I had some very, some hard experiences in co-ops. Oh. With, you know, where you only have to have Satan, you know, done poorly, you know.
Oh, it's rough, isn't it?
A few times. And, you know, it also feels very soon after Tony's death to have a noted vegan chef on the show.
No, I did think that.
he was such a hater.
Yeah, but I get it, though. You know, the vegans are their own worst enemy.
Right, the Hezbollah-like splinter faction.
Correct.
Of vegetarians,
correct.
I think he called them. But that was also an opinion that he had written in 2000, uh-huh. And that was, you know, kind of the swagger of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, there's, like, some very real, very macho problem sets that veganism seems like they start to address. So I mean, and it's why I'm psyched to talk to you, because you had your, you know, you gave a talk where you put a kill meter, you know,
yeah,
just like how many animals had been slaughtered while you were speaking, which I mean, I thought was cool, but next time I would like you to actually just bring those animals on stage to really drive them the point home, you know.
Like a Noah's Ark of death.
Just bring them on and just have a butcher just doing his thing.
For maximum impact.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want to make some vegetarians, like, it's actually not that hard.
No, it's not.
You just gotta bring people into the slaughterhouse. So what have you learned about mock meat? You were slagging your own early attempts at this stuff. I mean, what's in your cookbooks that people can use?
Well, actually, in terms of the mock meat side of things, I don't have a lot in there because they're actually really difficult to make properly.
Yeah. Okay.
Nothing. The way that all the dishes are created at the restaurant is every meal starts off not vegan, which some vegans think that makes my business not vegan.
Okay.
Some people think my business isn't vegan because I'm not vegan, which means that the wage that I take from my restaurant is being spent on things that aren't vegan, which therefore makes my business not be vegan.
Dude, I saw you had some salami on the breakfast plate this morning.
I definitely did.
let's talk about that a second, because you had said something that I thought was pretty fascinating. It's like, and you were kind of mocking people's responses to this and yet acknowledging them too. It was like, because you eat meat, like you've got more cred to talk about veganism?
Yeah, because people think then I can cook better. I have a better palate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which I'm going to have to say I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm not vegan. Being vegan changes your palate massively.
Yeah.
You don't taste things the way that I taste things, which is why the best chefs making the best vegan food are not vegan. Every restaurant I've taken my business partner to, and she's been vegan for nearly 20 years, I'm pretty sure, will be my friend's restaurants, like Mama Fuku in Sydney and things. Like, one of the best meals we've had recently for her was there. And as long as you tell these chefs,
right,
and, you know, these chefs, they're proper chefs that have worked all over the world and have incredible palates. And you go to a vegan restaurant, there's no such thing as like a vegan apprenticeship, you know, like you don't, there's not training for vegans like there is
right.
for chefs, like yeah. for regular chefs. They're not staging all around the world learning from the best.
Right.
They're just good home cooks that are vegans, you know. But when she, we get a product into the deli that's like a new vegan cheddar or something.
Yeah.
And she'll eat it, and everyone in my business, like, and you know, only half of my staff are vegan. Most of my kitchen are not, actually. And they'll get a new cheese, and she'll be like, Shan, this, taste this. It's just like I remember cheddar tasting. It's like, fuck, girl. Like, when was the last time you ate cheddar? Because literally, this is foul. And it tastes nothing like cheddar. But to her, it does. Because it's been so long since she's eaten it, you know. And they forget things like texture and mouthfeel and all these things. They just, it's because it's been so long, you're not missing, you don't miss them anymore. And so it's so, your palate changes so dramatically that the food that a vegan produces is so different to what the food is that someone that eats meat and dairy does, just because you're looking for different things, you know.
Right.
So I would definitely recommend ordering the vegan options off the meat
off the
chef.
Meat menu. Yeah, the meat chef. Well, it's interesting, you know, we've got a woman who works at Roads and Kingdoms who's from Mumbai and has never eaten meat really in her life, and she's, you know, she's had like the Impossible Burger kind of thing, and she's like, she just can't relate to it. She's like, I imagine this is what it's like to eat meat, and I don't like it, and it's not my, you know, it's like you just realize that this is a completely different sense. And I guess what you're catering to is the other side of things, people who do remember.
And want that.
And may have had a hamburger for lunch, but are coming to your place for dinner.
Yeah.
And you think, and that's because you think that's the kind of, the silent majority, I guess, of people who would want a meat experience.
Yeah, well, Impossible is the same. Impossible has been created more for the meat eaters than the vegans as well.
The
Beyond
for sure.
Burger and all those. That's, it's targeting the market. It's getting ahead, knowing full well that we cannot sustain the amount of meat that we are eating. You know, like, and
so you said it's complicated to create these kind of mock meats. What is the process like?
There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. Basically, it was like TVP, which is textured vegetable protein, which is like an old school vegan product. And it looks almost like dried dog food. And it smells like it too, actually. But you rehydrate it. See, this is the thing. This shit takes a lot of work, you know, because like if you or I were to, not knowing what it was, look at it. You would not think
to put it in your mouth.
It looks like kitty litter almost.
Getting better.
Yeah.
Food to kitty litter. All right. So you rehydrate it.
Rehydrate that. And that creates a texture. It's almost like you kind of have to also remember the kind of things that make meat meat. And it's the imperfections. It's a little bit of gristly bits. And it's that texture when you're eating, which is like a smooth texture. It is not recreating an animal product. You know, there is those imperfections through them. So the TVP kind of acts as that chew to it. Like you actually have something to gnaw on.
Yeah.
In a way.
Right.
Sort of binding it with wheat protein and a few other things, and then I would set the patties, and then I actually made like a liquid blood, like a blood that would soak the burgers in, and the burgers would soak in these bloods. So we use vacuum bags and put the blood in there, the vegan blood, and then put the patties in there and let them sit for like 2 days. And they absorb all this liquid. So when you cook them, the liquid then comes back out. So when you bite into it.
Wow.
It's way more graphic than the Impossible Burger. Like, I was like, fuck, you want a bleeding burger? I'll give you a bleeding burger.
Meanwhile, everybody in the restaurant is just covered in gore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, of course, newspapers and the media love to like exaggerate things. So, and of course, because I'm the meat guy that makes vegan food, they like to make it even worse.
Right.
Because they look at me and they're like, oh, you kind of look a bit goth. So the picture they used of me was me with the burger, and then they put blood coming down my chin.
Wow.
Of course, you know, because that's how they like, let's just make this like a little bit of a vampire photo shoot
just in time for Halloween.
Yeah.
Vampire vegans. So this thing, and what's your vegan blood made out of?
It's like a beetroot, pretty much beetroot and red wine reduction, same as when I used to blood sausage at the restaurants. We did vegan morphia, which was actually based on my grandmother's recipe. And a lot of these things are all the original recipes that I would use for non-vegan things. And just because I've been doing it for so long, I sort of know where I need to replace things, you know, and what products I need to use and the little tricks to make it what it needs to be. But the morcilla was the same. It was with barley and rice as sort of like the filler, same spices, same everything.
Yeah.
I use a vegetable suet.
Okay.
Instead of like an animal-based suet, which is the fat that's going into the sausage. And then the blood is a reduction of the beetroot, which really helps with that irony kind of taste, and the wine. And then we sort of cook that down and thicken it slightly to make it a bit viscous. And then we fold that blood mix through the rest of the mixture, which is what you would be doing with a blood sausage anyway.
Yeah.
And then we roll it in cling film and we poach them as a sausage. And then you can unwrap them and they hold. And
they're still there.
Yeah, Jesus. And you cook them off into little discs. So we did like blood sausage empanadas, and we did a whole blood sausage, which was far more confrontational for customers and took a little bit to catch on. Because, I mean, a lot of meat eaters don't even want to eat blood sausage, let alone vegans.
That is true.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for your Polish, like, you know, lukewarm blood soup version.
I will give that to
that
you,
it's
don't
just
you
like
worry.
Straight iron taste, like you're licking an open wound.
God, what time is it?
I know. It's 8:30 in the morning. we're making you, all you listeners, so incredibly hungry with these descriptions. So your family had came from Spain.
My father, he came to Australia when he was 16.
Okay, and Spaniards, noted vegans.
Noted vegans, yes. Noted vegans. And Australians. I mean,
well, yeah, that's true. You're between a couple cultures.
That's it. My mother is basically, she was, you know, the Australian version of a skinhead, I guess, which is called a Sharpie. Like the non-racist skinheads.
Yeah, you got your leftist skinheads and your right-wing skinheads. Yeah. You can be one or the other.
Yeah, the Sharpies weren't like Nazis. They were just basically the oi kids of Melbourne, I guess. Yeah, and, yeah. And they had the high jeans and the little twin sets and the shaved heads. Oh, more like the Chelsea haircut, you know, the fringe.
Right.
And the,
yeah, yeah.
That's so that was mum. So that's definitely not vegan as well. Do you know, that's overcooked lamb chops and boiled cabbage and some tripe or something. That's pretty British.
What's your vegan tripe game like?
I haven't done it yet, but you know they sell it.
Oh, yeah?
The Asian grocery stores sell vegan tripe and vegan intestines, which is weird.
Right.
Really weird. Because they have like full hot pot kits.
Oh,
for
shit.
Vegans.
Yeah.
So they do have all that offal, and it all comes in these packs.
So let's talk about the politics of it. You run a completely vegan, which you said proper vegan. Uh-huh. It's like no honey.
No, nothing.
And why is that? Like, why go so far to that end?
You have to. It's one or the other. You know, when I first was thinking about my restaurant, I opened a food truck first to sort of test run it because I wasn't sure whether a purely vegan business would be sustainable and whether I needed to be veggie and vegan.
Yeah.
But all I kept thinking of was how annoying it must be as a vegan to have to go grocery shopping or to go to a restaurant, you know, whereas for us, we can go in.
Yeah.
And unless you're allergic to something,
right,
you don't even have to read a label. Like unless you're trying to be organic or some shit. Like you can literally, if you don't care, you could go in and just buy anything off the shelf because us as meat eaters can eat vegan food. We can eat everything. But as a vegan,
it doesn't work.
Just a grocery shop must take so long.
Yeah.
You know, every label and even things that don't look like they would be, like breadcrumbs, they've got fish oil in it. You know, you look at on the back of a packet of breadcrumbs and it says tuna oil. It's like, why the fuck is there tuna oil in it?
Yeah,
So I can only imagine how long it would take. So how good it would feel. And you're always that guy in a restaurant, you know, like you're with a bunch of mates and everyone's ordered the steak and the fish and chips and that. And you're like, just wanted to check, is there any dairy in that? You know, and then you're that guy and everyone's like, fuck, again. You know, and then the meal will come out and it'll have cheese on it. And then you gotta send it back. And then you just always the jerk at the table that's making it harder for everyone else. And that would really suck. So I thought, imagine how amazing it would be if you go into a restaurant and not ask one question and not have to make one alteration. Come into our deli and it's a grocery store where you don't have to look at one label and you know that everything in that shop you can buy and it's 100% safe for the sort of diet that you want to have.
Right.
So that's why I decided to do it, and people weren't doing that. And, you know, vegan restaurants generally don't have a good booze background either. And I've come from bars and things as well. And it was really important to me to have a strong alcohol component to the restaurant because that's what makes a good restaurant is beautiful wines and great cocktails and all these things. And that's what vegans are missing out on because it was like a mango lassi with vegan like coconut yogurt or like a green smoothie. And I'm sure vegans want to get hammered just the same as everyone else wants to get hammered. Like, why are people not giving these people some booze?
Get drunk and screw like the rest of us.
Exactly. So but no one was giving it to them, you know? So I wanted to give it to them.
Good. You just want somebody to give it to them.
Yeah.
Man, there's a bumper sticker. This thing about you eating meat and not being like, not being the hero that some people are looking for in the vegan community. The politics can be so like self-immolating. Often it's just like, okay, well, fuck all this. Do you feel caught up in those politics sometimes?
It's huge. I've become this poster girl for veganism and I'm not even vegan. So I've managed to become someone of notoriety within a scene that I've kind of managed to infiltrate in a way and not have to actually be in it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
So, and I think people get a bit pissy about that because in my mind, I've been called a whore. I've been called everything from just a bitch, you traitor, you sellout, you know, we're profiting off veganism, all these things. And in a newspaper article I did the other day, there was a pull quote that just said for me, vegans are the worst. I was like, fuck, man. I'm like, that was in context at the time.
Great. And we have a headline for this podcast episode.
Vegans are the worst. Yeah, right. But it was in context of, it's like, I'm feeding 6,500 people vegan food a month.
Right.
That's only in one business. You know, the other business is probably doing about 7,000 customers a month.
God damn.
So that is, you know, say close to 14,000 people. Not saying that they all would be eating vegan, but that's, we know that it's 75% minimum of those customers and meat eaters. That's what, 10,000 people minimum a month that are not eating meat because our business exists.
Right.
That's a whole lot fucking more than some asshole behind a keyboard giving me shit for being able to make vegan food as a non-vegan. So really, I'm not quite sure what the agenda is. Would they rather me close down Smith & Daughters and open a steakhouse? Because that would be a lot easier for me in terms of the amount of grief I get for what I do and the amount of work that goes into recreating these dishes. It's like I cooked down in Tasmania at Franklin with Duncan from Africola, and it was the first time I've cooked meat in public in about 6 years. And the dish was, it was like a duck heart dish, and it needed cream to finish the sauce. And so I went into the fridge, and it was really automatic. I sort of just knew it needed this cream. So I went into the cool room and grabbed a bottle and put it in the pan. And after I did it, I was like, fuck, you guys have it so easy. You can just walk into a fridge and grab a bottle of cream. Like, when I want to do that, I got to soak some nuts. I got to blend it into a cream. I got to culture it. It takes me 3 days.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you realize how easy your job is compared to what I have to do?
For that, you get shit.
And for that, I get shit. And and it's a choice that I've made because there was no one providing food for vegans that was good enough. Do you know, there wasn't a restaurant where they could drink good wine and eat good vegan food and be adults. Do you know, it was all very kiddie. Do you know, the waiters were shit. Do you know, because they were all just like a bunch of backpacker hippies and no one was a committed hospo. It wasn't committed to hospitality. You know, it was just, like I said, the pay as you feel. It was not a good dining experience. You couldn't like put on a new dress and go for your wedding anniversary. There was nowhere like that for them to go. So you've made the ethical decision. You're technically being better than us in terms of like making the call to be better to the planet.
Yeah.
But in return, you get two middle fingers and a curry.
Just like some abuse and a shitty lentil stew.
And shitty lentil stew.
Yeah.
And then I get it from the meat eaters and they get pissy with me because I'm recreating meat dishes. And it's almost like some of those real bogan kind of Aussie dudes that are like really insecure about the way they eat and when they're buying their 20 packs of budget sausages from the supermarket, you know. And they're getting defensive because I've called something a sausage. But sausages are our thing. Get your own thing. You don't want to eat meat? Why you got to eat our shit? I'm like, why do you care? First of all, your shitty sausages are still for sale at the supermarket, so just relax. Like, I'm not taking over your stuff.
Right.
But they get really mad too. And like I said in that talk yesterday, it's like, what else would you call something? If you're trying to replicate something, what else am I going to call it? Like a soy log? and how about those words like soysage? That grosses me out so much. It's like baby talk for food, you know? It's like faking and frickin'. And it's like, no. Like, we're adults. We can call the thing. We're all big enough to be able to deal with this, you know? So,
but you still don't want to call. What was the what you called morcilla? Like, soy
log. The red, spicy red gluten log. What does that mean? That means nothing. It sounds like it tastes disgusting, so no one's gonna buy that.
Right.
So we need a point of reference to people. So yes, I have the meat eaters hating me for replicating their shit, which is what they think, you know, their stuff. Vegans hating me because I'm a meat eater making vegan food. So you kinda can't win.
Yeah.
But it's working because the business is doing great and we're busy every night and you know, and you can't get in, and
you've got your second book coming out.
Second book's out.
Yeah.
And, you know, we the first one outsold Jamie Oliver for a whole 3 days. So that was a good 3 days.
What's gonna happen now? You were talking about this pending ecological apocalypse that we all are kind of aware of and are kind of like pretending is not on the menu. Do you think you're kind of cooking has a role? Are we going to see a lot more of these kinds of restaurants?
Yeah, it is going to change. And I think chefs are acknowledging this, and it will be chefs like myself and other non-vegan chefs that I think are going to start changing people's thoughts on vegan food. I do a lot of collabs in Australia, and I've never done a collab with a vegan restaurant ever. I've refused.
Yeah.
It's always with super meat heavy restaurants too. So Bell's in Australia, Bell's Hot Chicken is owned by a friend of mine, Morgan, and you know, he does fried chicken for Noma and all these things, and that's just his that's his whole jam is fried chicken. So I went and did a thing at his restaurant, and I turned his entire restaurant vegan for the day and didn't change an item menu at all. We did drumsticks, we did chicken wings, we did everything, but the whole thing was vegan. We did 750 covers in 4 hours.
What the fuck?
And I do it with people like that.
Yeah.
Because I want these guys to see that there is this giant market and a need for this, and yeah, they're all great chefs and they can do it, you know. And his vegetarian item on his menu could have been vegan so easily, but he just didn't even think about it. I was like, that's even if it's just purely from a financial standpoint,
right,
this is an entire demographic that you're missing out on, yeah, you know. And people come to us now because, not because even they're vegan, but we have a massive Jewish clientele because our food is kosher because it's vegan. And we used have vegan prawns, like garlic prawns. You should see their faces. Like, they're like kids that are getting away with doing something real cheeky. Like, they're eating these prawns, kind of like, don't look at me, you know. And then pregnant women will come in who can't have raw egg in aioli or mayonnaise, right, and things like that. And they come in and they buy big tubs of mayonnaise because they're craving it and they want it in their sandwiches, so now they can have it.
Right.
So the demographic has gone from, you know, attracting vegans to now mostly meat eaters to now every allergy and,
yeah,
God, everything. We just cater for everyone now, do you know? So it's, everyone can eat vegan food, whereas not everyone can eat a steak.
The people with the nut allergies are fucked, though. They should stay out of your restaurant.
They should stay out of the restaurant, along with the no garlic and onion people. I mean, you tell a vegan chef to not put onions and garlic in something, basically my work here is done. You know, like, what have I got to base anything on if I can't do that? And then the shiny food. Someone told me they couldn't eat anything shiny, which was nightshade, I figured out in the end. But I'm not a nutritionist either. When someone tells me these things, I'm like, I don't know what that means.
That's a very abstract way of describing.
That's what she said. Yeah, I can't eat anything shiny. And she's drinking a glass of wine, right? And I was like, aren't grapes shiny? Like, or is it not shiny anymore because it's been juiced? Because is definitely shimmering.
What is a shiny food?
Like onions and eggplant, capsicum, zucchini.
That's not a thing.
Nightshade.
What? Oh, is that an actual allergy?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I didn't know that at the time, and she just told me she couldn't eat anything. Like, you know, the waiter comes into the kitchen and goes, "This chick on 34 can't eat shiny food." And I was like, "What the fuck, man? You're joking me." Oh. And because they didn't say nightshade, and actually at that point I didn't really know what nightshade was, because like, there's something new every fucking day.
Right.
But when Jay came in and said shiny, I'm like, nope, you can tell them to go home.
You're going to eat all the matte foods.
All the matte foods they want. Like, what even is matte? I'm like, everything is shiny. Like, an onion is shiny. Even after you peel it, it's still somewhat shiny. You know, like, am I, oh, fuck, I don't know. So, it can be a little bit painful, but it's great, you know. And I also am really stoked to be doing it because, you know, well, actually, the whole thing came about with vegan food and committing to it because I was actually between music and food. And with my ex-husband being a professional skateboarder, I managed to sort of swindle my way into my band being on the Vans Warped Tour in America.
Okay.
And we did like 16 shows and we got to like sort of stay on the Vulcan bus.
Oh, man.
And do a tour.
All right.
But we'd only play. Yeah, we'd only play for like 45 minutes. And sometimes, you know, the way the Vans Warped Tour works is that they didn't have like a set set list.
Yeah.
So the kids would have to get there pretty early in the morning. And like one day NoFX would be playing at 10 in the morning, and sometimes they'd be at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So sometimes we were on at 10, but sometimes we were on at 8 o'clock at night. So sometimes we were playing to a fucking huge crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it wouldn't be, but you'd only be playing for 45 minutes a day. So then I was so bored that I went and worked for the catering kitchen for free because I wanted to cook because I was missing cooking so much, you know. And there was heaps of like, obviously a lot of the dudes in the bands were vegans, so there was a whole thing there. So I started playing around with vegan food there as well.
Oh shit.
And then, you know, I got back and, you know, mum was like, all right, so music food. And she goes, what's the first thing you think about when you wake up and what's the last thing you think about when you go to bed? And I was like, cooking. And she goes, oh, well, there's your answer.
Yeah.
And she said, and with the whole vegan thing, it's like you can either open a restaurant and compete with 100 other people on the block, or you can open up a vegan restaurant and be the only one doing it. And I was like, well, shit, that's just good business.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? So, like, not only is it creatively awesome because I have to try and figure out new ways to do things every day, but you know, hospitality is a hard industry. Either way, it's hard to get ahead, you know? So why would I choose something where there's, you know,
Were you diving right in the middle of it?
Yeah, but create something new that's my own, which is very hard to do in food because everything's been done 1,000 times.
Do you think that there's going to be, we'll see more of these meat chefs kind of make the move and open restaurants? Have you heard from people who are like, you know, I'm thinking of opening a vegan restaurant or?
No, but you know, I saw Danny from Mission Chinese. He's doing heaps of vegan stuff lately.
I've noticed,
like, because I think he's working with Impossible or something.
Right.
And he's doing, like, the Mapo and all those dishes, which I think is fucking awesome.
Right.
So I see that. But I don't, all my friends who do the vegans that are getting onto vegan food, they're still not doing what I'm doing. They're still doing very much the plant-based, like the strict veg-based dishes. They're not mimicking meat.
Yeah.
And also, you know, even in the 5 years, I've barely had 5 chefs come and work for me, qualified chefs, because people don't want, it takes a special sort of chef to like learn their trade for 10, 20 years and then come into my kitchen and have to pretend everything they've ever learned gets put aside.
Right.
And it's like starting fresh again. And there's not a lot of people that are willing to sort of start from scratch. So most of my chefs have been my dishies that I've then put through school.
Yeah, yeah.
Which again, a lot of people had a problem with because I've put my chefs through a regular apprenticeship, which again in their minds makes my restaurant not vegan
because they're just covered in blood
they've got chicken carcasses hanging off them like a Christmas tree.
that animal carcasses have somehow fueled their careers, so they're it's all tainted.
Good
times. Well, shit, thank you for being on here, Shannon. I appreciate it, and if someday I ever cross that impossibly large ocean between you and me, I'll come and get it. What's the one thing that I would have to get from your
menu? Probably the braised beef, which is like our oxtail dish.
Oh man!
Yeah, with polenta. I promise you, you'll like it.
It's good to end on the non cauliflower ear.
Yeah, I promise you, I won't feed you that.
Beautiful. All right, thank you, Shannon.
All right, thank you.
The Trip is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg. Produced by Josie Holtzman and Danielle Roth of Future Projects. Our editor is Roads and Kingdoms, Taffy Mokanyadze. Our executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. Thanks as always to Adele Rodriguez for the art. Check out the updated art and logo he made for the show this week. And to the Bay Area legend, hip-hop producer Dan the Automator, for the show's music. Next week, and I can't lie, I am incredibly excited about this, I finally get to sit down with Dan the Automator, one of my musical heroes, and drink ridiculously strong Sorta Negronis and talk about life, race, hip-hop, and our common roots in the city by the bay. We'll meet you there.